people speaking. And so we ended up going over a bit. This session, Pillars of My Faith, is a traditional thing that takes place in most of the Sensitone Symposia throughout the country. And it's my favorite, I think, of all, because it's a chance for us to hear individual people and the ideas and the experiences that they build their faith on, the things that anchor them and make them who they are. And so I come away from that every year with a renewed strength and a renewed connection with people, with individuals. It amazes me in the church that people come from such diverse backgrounds, and yet we come together and our meetings are similar no matter where we are, and we share some common things. Just like, Jews going anywhere in the world, as Mike has explained, you can go from synagogue to synagogue, and you feel like you're part of the community. You always feel like you're home. And with a church like ours that has grown exponentially in the past 20 years and has expanded into the entire world, as fast as it has, and still makes us feel at home, that's great. I think that's very interesting and worth exploring, worth understanding, and that's what the Pillars of My Faith does. This particular one, the theme is the African-American experience as Mormons, and that is a unique perspective that can only be experienced by those who are. Hi. We just got started. How you doing? Those of us who are not African American can never fully appreciate. We have to always have our eyes and our ears open so we can understand it better. Understand that experience, and understand how our own past as members of the church and as Americans, how it plays into that, and how our culture has been enriched, both in the church and in the country, by the contributions of African Americans. In thinking about this, I went back and did a bunch of searches and looked up to see attitudes and beliefs about the place of African Americans within the culture of the church and the history of the church as the theology was evolving in the early days up through to the present time. And those nice quotes are home sitting on my computer printer in my rush out today, so I'll spare you. But it was interesting to see, there was a quote from Joseph Smith from 1844 where he was a candidate for the presidency of the United States, an independent candidate. And a big question then was about Texas, the Texas problem, what we were going to do about the Texas problem. And his solution was to annex Texas, because that way, if we annex Texas, there would be all the blacks in Texas that we could free. And freeing them, we could help them go someplace like Mexico, where they'd be more accepted, where there's no such thing as race, and they wouldn't have to suffer, so we'd make them free. And I thought that was kind of an interesting point of view. In one of the darkest periods of early church history was when the Mormons were kicked out of Missouri, and one of the major reasons for that was because being a New England church, they were considered, and most were, abolitionists of slavery, for the abolition. And here they were in Missouri, which was, there's a really nasty sort of balance hanging on there And if the Mormons got too numerous, then they would vote and Missouri would lose status as a slave state. So that question came up constantly when you read church history. And there were interesting ways, everybody came up with their own way to get around that. One of my favorites was when Joseph Smith was asked, are you abolitionists? No, do you believe in slavery? And he said, no. He says, well, so you're abolitionists, you want to get rid of slavery and free the slaves. And he says, no, we'll let the Lord do that. Which I thought was an interesting sidestepping of the issue. But it went all the way up through different theologians trying to come up with explanations for everything around them, and the differences in race were no different, and every race was subject to different kinds of explanations. In one explanation of what is a Gentile, they said everybody from the Pacific Islands and Europe and non-Jews and all these people can be Gentiles, but people from African origin can't be Gentiles. I thought that was interesting, short-lived point of view. And the darkest time was probably when I was growing up, and it's why it interests me so much. Growing up in California in the 60s, and I remember 1967 conference, general conference that I attended, where Ezra Taft Benson, I actually drove from Utah or from California with some friends and attended a conference, and he gave a talk about the evils of communism and it taking over our country in the world. And in that, he said, we have to be very careful because the communists and their leaders are having too strong an effect on the intellectual Negroes, and they're going to be led down, you know, a bad path, and it'll be to their destruction as well as the country's. And then that moment where we finally had the revelation that extended full priesthood blessings to members, to all male members of the church. And a time that liberated not just the African-American members, but liberated all of us. And all of us who can remember that, moment when we heard about that and how important that was to our lives, those of us who are old enough to remember that. And the statement, if you read it, was really great. It says, the Lord has blessed us finally. He's listened to our prayers, and he's blessed us. He's given us the answer. We can open it up. And that was really, I think, a very touching thing. We have three people today, and they have different perspectives, all of them, which is why they're here. Terry Bishop is one I know the best. She is in the branch I attend in the district. Terry's been in my church for 18 years. She's an old-timer and has been a leader in the District of Columbia, in the church, serving in Relief Society, president, I believe, in the district, and is a gospel doctrine teacher now in the branch, and has done just about everything, as you can imagine, in those 18 years. And in her life, she is one of the more Christian people I know. She works as the executive director of the Committee for Creative Nonviolence, which is the largest shelter in the United States, homeless shelter, 700 men and women, I believe. And I remember last year, I believe, I was watching the news and saw Terry speaking out because they were going to try and force closure of part of it and turn people away. And she said, they can arrest me, but nobody's turning anybody away from here. And I said, we claim her as our own. We're happy about that. Sitting next to her is Donna Samaros. Donna is has been a member about 4 years, I think. And her daughter is here also, right? Yeah. Who is a student at BYU. Just finished her freshman year, as did my daughter. And she... I'm really anxious to see somebody who's a recent convert and how they experience it, and also what she's experienced about BYU through her daughter. And Ulai, I hope I said that right. Okay, good. Amade is from Cote d'Ivoire, the Ivory Coast, and is a convert of about 10 years. And thank goodness he came because, and thank you for stepping in at the last minute. We had another man, another brother balancing out our panel, but he was unable to be here because of a business trip that took him to Boston suddenly. So we did some casting about, and thank goodness he stepped forward here and is with us today. So why don't we start with Terry and East Dan. We're supposed to end at 11:20, so maybe out, well, by 5 after, certainly we should be answering questions. And sooner is fine.
Good morning.
And speak up for the tape.
Okay, I would like to thank Buffy for inviting me to be on this panel and for you for attending this session. I guess the theme that has run throughout my life was the statement Christ made that I will become the world. And it always put in the back of my mind that the world was something to overcome. There were things that we're going to encounter that would make us either better or worse for having gone through the journey. My experience in the church has not been unique from my experience in the world. I grew up in a family of 7 children. My family's background was Methodist. They were very religious people and had always taught us just to believe in God, rely upon Him, and accept His guidance in all things. As I was growing up, always had a feel that God was pulling me towards something else, and I had to ask a lot of questions about what this something else really was. I realized that in the world, wherever I was, and these are things that my family had tried to get me past to just let me know that God accepts me the way I am. If I were to walk in this room this morning, say 97% of you are white, and you would readily recognize me as black, and I would readily recognize you as white, and whether that's in the church or outside the church, that has been the way it has been. There have been people in the world who, for whatever reason, could look at me and not see some worth because of the blackness or whatever else that they could see from the outward appearance. But I had been taught by my family that God looks past the outward appearance, that He looks at the heart. So I've always been searching for the heart of myself and the heart of man and the heart of the church. And that hasn't always been an easy thing to do. I came in the church right after the blacks were off at the priesthood. And it was at a time when I had a lot of questions. And not only did I have a lot of questions about treatment in the world, I certainly had questions about treatment in the church, because I did not believe God has ever been a respecter of people. And I felt that the prophet or whoever was just catching up to where God had already been. And I had some problem with them taking so long to get there. I asked a lot of questions when they came to talk to me, when the 2 missionaries came. And each time they came, they brought other people with them. And by the time before I was baptized, I had a living room full of people, because I would always have a list of questions I needed to ask. And those, believe it or not, some of those questions were answered, but most of them were not. I did not join the church because I found all the answers I had been seeking for. I joined the church because after I'd gone through so many studies and I hadn't gotten to baptism, they brought a young African missionary to speak with me and to see whether or not he could convince me of some things. But he did a very unique thing. He said, "I'm not going to ask you to believe anything." He said, "I'm going to ask you to do this." He said, "If you would let me pray for you today, And he said, if you go to sleep tonight and you sleepily, and you wake up tomorrow morning and you don't even remember that I've spoken with you and you don't remember anything about your study or whatever, and at the end of the day, if you remember then that you've had a good day and a good night's sleep, he said, I want you to seriously consider whether you should not go ahead and go with your baptism. See, doing this whole study, I had not well, because there were questions, unresolved things, and I didn't feel comfortable about a lot of them. So I was tossing and turning all night on some things. But after he prayed for me, I slept through the night that night, and I did wake up the next morning, and I didn't even think about it. And it was near the end of the day before I remembered I was asked to consider my baptism. And I used that as an indication that God was giving me some kind of response to what I needed to do. He was never going to say, you know everything you need to know. That's not part of what religion is about or about what faith is all about. If you know everything, then you don't have to exercise faith. So I did proceed on that point to come into the church, but the church is very much like the world. The same people who were out in the world just walked through the doors of the church, and not all of them went through a major conversion that where they put aside all of the way they thought, all the biases and the prejudice and other things that they had out there. They quite often bring them into the church with them. And I'm not unique from that either. I'm sure I still have some things where I need to put off the old person as well. But I had some very worldly, earthly experiences in the church. In the church for about 3 months, I was called to teach gospel doctrine. That class had been taught by the state the state president. He had taught that class for some time, and he resented very much being relieved from the class. And well, he did. And he would give me a bad time every Sunday. And he would ask me questions that he thought I could not answer. And I was, of all things to be teaching, I was teaching the missionary journeys of Paul at the time, and he had a personal issue with Paul. So he put me through some changes about Paul and what I thought I knew about Paul. And so I had to stop my lessons one Sunday and to tell him. I said, I don't think you are here to support my calling. And if you have an issue with me, if you would address it outside of the class, I said, because I feel that God has called me to teach this class. At least that's what the church has told me all along, that the callings come from God. And if God has called me to teach this class, I'm going to teach the class whether you're in it or not, and whether anyone else comes to the class or not. If I have to teach it to the empty seats, that's what I'll do. Because other people were being drawn out of the class because of comments he was saying. And it was getting smaller and smaller. And after I got home that Sunday, his wife made him call because she told him later. And he called and he apologized for what he had done. And I said, you need to speak with God about, you know, your conduct. You don't need to speak with me about it, but I accept your apology. That was one experience that I had that was could have left a bitter taste in my mouth if I had wanted it to. Another experience, and I'm not going to go through all of them. I just want you to know the church is in the world, but we should not be of the world. I had a very good friend, and this is when I was attending church in Florida. Her name is Nancy Moe, and I know she wouldn't mind my saying that because I've said it so many times. But she was teaching a relief society and was talking about the time when the blackness came upon the Nephites, and you know, you ended up with the Lamanites and whatever. And she went on to say how things were and how things would change after you turned to be righteous and whatever. And she turned and she looked at me because we were good friends. And she said, Terry, she said, you know, one day you will be as white as I am. And I said, I hope not, because you could use some sun. But we got past that too. And there were times when I, in this same branch that was even falling behind this comment, there was a black sister with six kids who did not think it funny at the time, and she left the church and she never came back. I said all that to say this. The church, when you come through the doors, regardless of what your faith, where you've been and been in relationship to God right then, that does not mean that that's the end of all of your problems, because all of your brothers and sisters are going to love you and you're going to be just the way God would have you to be, because we're all working on something. And if we're not working on something, we should be working on something. My experience in the church, as I said initially, has not been unique from my experience in the world. I'm a professional person who have to work with a lot of other people who are professional, and 97% of those are white. And I recall when I was working at EPA on the Indoor Air Quality Task Force, I walked in the room a little bit late, and I would say everyone in the room were white males. And I sat in the back of the room, and they all kept looking back for some reason, and I didn't know what in the world is wrong. Why are they looking back? So finally one of them got up enough nerve to say, "Are you sure you're in the right room?" And I asked, "Is this the Indoor Air Quality Task Force?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "I'm in the right room." Said all that to say that, you know, sometimes we need to get past the color on a person's skin, get past the way they talk, get past the way they're dressed sometimes, get past all of that outward appearance, and try, as Christ did so successfully, to look at the heart of the person. I work with over 700 homeless people, and they have all kinds of problems. And I went because I felt that God was calling me to serve, the same way He had called me to serve in the church. But I found out in that service He'd called me to do more than that. He'd called me to learn to love. Because He said there's a more excellent way we can do things, and there's a more excellent way we can love people. We can look past all of the things that make them different, all of the things that even are ungodly, unchristlike, and love them in spite of those things. It's always good to talk with people of God, because we are on a journey. And on that journey, my father always says, remember, you're here to try to overcome the world. We are in a probationary state. We're all on probation. And how well we will fare that probation depends on how focused we are on what God would have us to do. I thank you for the opportunity to be here, and I thank God for the opportunity to serve. And I hope, as I'm going along this journey, that I'll retain the faith that I've always had, that regardless of where I am, in or out of the church, salvation is of God. Thank you.
Okay. Wow. That's just an inadequate note to say something after you, Terry. But I'm just going to have the Lord speak through me and have the Spirit lead. I just want to introduce myself. My name is Donna Miller Samaru. I'm a mother of three kids. Renee, who's 18 and goes to BYU. I have James, who is in middle school, and he's 13 years old, and Daniel is 7 and is in elementary school. I've been divorced for the last 3 years now, and moved to the Washington, D.C. area. Before coming to Washington, D.C., I lived in New York for about 27 years of my life. I'm originally from South America, Guyana, South America, the only English-speaking country in South America. My parents moved here and relocated the whole family to New York. My siblings went to San Diego, California to live, and myself and parents stayed in New York. And I tried living in California for like a year and couldn't hang with it, and come back to New York because I wanted to be in the limelight of life. Went to London, got married, come back to New York and live. Everything, I always keep going back to New York. Anyway, I've been through a separation with my husband, and while I was going through that separation and my husband left, I was praying and asking the Lord. My kids was the most important thing to me at that point in my life. And I know I did not want to raise inner city black kids, quote unquote, because I just wanted a better life for my children. And I couldn't afford to keep them in prep schools. They all had scholarships to prep schools, but transportation and my job, I was assistant buyer at Bloomingdale's, and I couldn't afford to keep them in prep school, keep up with the rent and all the different things that had to be done on my salary. So I prayed and I asked the Lord if he would help me to figure out where should I move. But I had my answer in my head. I wanted to move to New Jersey and keep my job at Bloomingdale's. I had the answers, but I was praying. And as I was laying in the chair praying, this Alexandria, Virginia came up in my heart. Actually, the word Alexandria, and when I went to work, I looked at the internet, and I know there was an Alexandria, Texas, and Alexandria, Virginia, and I chose Virginia because I started researching the school system, and I saw that the school system was good for my kids, like prep school education, and it all fit in. And I talked to my family, and I told them I was moving here. They thought I was crazy, crazy. You don't know anybody in that area. Why are you moving here? Well, I feel the Lord wants me to move there. My mother thought I was nuts. But I knew that I wanted to move here. So I packed up my things, put it in storage, leave my kids with my mom, head out on the bus after work to this area. As I was leaving that morning, my phone was going to be turned off that night, a friend called me and says, hey, Donna, I'm back in town from California. I'm here to do my master's. I'm like, oh, I'm moving to Virginia. She's like, who do you know in Virginia? I'm like, nobody. She's like, well, where are you going to stay? I was like, nowhere. I'm going to just go into a hotel. I'm just going to stay. I'm just going. She's like, well, I know a friend that just moved from San Diego to California with her husband. He's in the military. Why don't you give her a call? This is her phone number. So when I got to work, I give her friend a call, Carrie, and she says, yeah, you could come and stay with me, and, you know, I'll show you around. That's what happened. I came here. Carrie picked me up. She showed me around. I bought a car. I didn't know a car then. I had some money with my sister and mailed me from San Diego, and I bought a car with it. And the budget I moved here with was like $2,000 in my pocket. This was my life savings. And I was just coming, and the Lord, I have no clue. I had the biggest headache in my life. And my life was so dark because I was going through disliking my husband. It was full, my heart was full of hate. But yes, still, there's this supreme being called God, and I'm trying to listen to him. And I was in a confused state of mind, but I was listening to the Spirit, and I didn't even know it was the Spirit at that point in time in my life. So I moved here. I went and filled an apartment application. I got my the okay, and I told my mom she could bring the kids down on the bus. I went back up to New York to get the rest of my stuff. Okay, Mom, bring the kids Friday on the bus. When I got back on that Wednesday, that Thursday, they told me I couldn't get the apartment. But for some reason, the Lord was talking to me, and he says, don't stop your mom from bringing the kids. Let them come. I didn't have an apartment. I didn't have no way to put my kids. But then I went to the Hamlets, and within a day, my kids came at 9 o'clock the night, and at 4 o'clock that afternoon, I got the keys to an apartment. It was so crazy that when my mom got here, all we could do was, like, spread blankets and sleep on the floor from what I had on my car. My nephew, my brother, who now passed away, was supposed to be bringing my stuff up on the truck that Saturday, the next morning. When my mother arrived at the bus stop, she had these keys with my the things I put in storage had a keys to the storage house. She's like, look, I bring the keys. I'm like, no, you weren't supposed to bring it. You were supposed to leave it so they can get the furniture to bring it. And everything went crazy. My nephew was on this shoot for this movie, and he couldn't come out. And anyway, it happened that we didn't have furniture or anything for like a month. So we were living like on the floor and cooking out of a little pot from the Giant. And you know how sturdy those are. And I was just like, whoa. And I held on a job for 15 years to Bloomingdale's, and for some reason, it's so amazing, when I came here, I couldn't hold on a job for a day. It seems like everybody, if you hire me today, tomorrow you'll find a reason not to like me and fire me. It was just like that in my life. For 9 months, I did not hold a job. I did not know how to pay my rent if my family wasn't sending me money or supporting me. This was in August. End of August, I remember one day I was walking to the rental office in September, and I went to pay my first rent, which was the September rent, because I pay half rent for August. And I was crying coming back from the rental office. And I was walking with my head down, and I was crying. And I was praying as I was walking there. I said, Lord, could you just send somebody to tell me that it's going to be okay in my life? I was crying. The missionaries was standing up the stairs to my apartment complex. And I walked by them. They were talking to a lady, and I just walked by them. And I went up into my apartment because I didn't really want to talk to them. No one was talking to me. So I was bent in my head crying and praying. And I went up the stairs to my apartment. But as what had happened prior to that, I had met the missionaries at my friend's house, you know, just in talking in the yard. And, you know, I told them I was supposed to be getting this apartment. And, you know, I wasn't sure or nothing like that the day before, something like that. And when I got into my apartment, I heard a knock on my door. And when I opened my door, it was the missionaries at my door. And they came in and they shared the gospel with me. It was really good, and I felt very comforted when they left. But what I didn't know was when I passed them, the two missionaries were standing there talking. One of the sister missionaries kept her eyes on me because she was prompted that she needed to talk to me. And she saw where I went. And they were looking for this lady named Donna Samaru to follow up on her. So she told her companion, "Don't let's go look for Donna Samaru. Let's go talk to the lady that just passed through. I see where she went into that apartment." They came and they knocked at my door, and the person they were looking for, and me, happened to be the same person, Donna Samaru. And they shared a message with me, but they didn't tell me her promptings because they didn't think I could understand it then. And I probably wouldn't have understood it then. And asked me what was their promptings. I went ahead and I took the discussions, and I was like, I'm not going to be baptized again, and blah, 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 blah. You know, I was just like deferring it. It was nice to have them come and share a spiritual message, but I was feeling no inclinations that I want to be baptized. So one day I was like having this splitting headache, and I said to them, they were over there, and I says, you know, I need a blessing. And they says, yeah, we could arrange that. I was like, huh? You could arrange a blessing? No, I don't know a priest for blessings. So like, oh, you going to get me a blessing? You know, I was like, okay. So the elders came over and they gave me a priesthood blessing. I felt so good. And I was on my way to New York the next morning. On my way to New York in the bus, something happened. And I don't know what happened, but I just knew I had to get back to Virginia. I just had to get back. So I got to New York, got my dental work done. I usually would stay a couple of days, hang out with my friends or my mom. But that trip, I just got my dental work, jumped back on the bus, came back to call the missionaries and says, I'm ready to be baptized. And they came over and did my baptism, and I took my baptismal covenant one day at a time. I was scared, and it was a nerve-wracking experience, but I know in taking my baptismal covenants that the Lord has truly blessed my life. I have totally, totally saw His blessings in my life, because He has not just blessed me, He has blessed my kids. I could look at my kids and see the Lord blessing us. Our lives, from being in this church and really embracing the gospel with heart, I could look at the blessings that has been bestowed on me. But as I progressed in the church, I had, you know, I had Collins as a stake missionary, and right now I'm a gospel doctrine teacher. And I mean, my Collins has truly, truly blessed my life, because one of the things last year, the year before, we were studying the Book of Mormon. We were studying the Old Testament. And I had such a great and wonderful teacher. And every day from Sunday school, she would say, you know, as we're leaving, the Lord does give people a new heart. And with me dealing with all the confusion of going through a separation, I had such a dark heart. For that whole year, she keeps saying that one statement. And I know every time she said that word, she was talking to me. And I went home every week, and I tried to ask the Lord to create in me a clean heart and renew a right spirit. And I'm here to testify that the Lord do give us a new heart when we ask Him sincerely for a new heart. Because He has worked truly on mine. And it's still a work in progression, but I could tell you He has cleaned my heart. I have come to the point in my life now that I am so humbled that I could, that I actually could sit down at a table and eat dinner with my ex-husband, and it's fine. It's perfect. It's okay. There's no hurt. There's no anger. There's no nothing. It's okay to, you know, I forgive you, and we've worked through all of the hard stuff. And I know I could not have gotten to that place without the help of my Sunday school teacher. And when we were moving on to study the Book of Mormon the next year, I prayed to the Lord. I says, Lord, I'm looking forward to devouring the Book of Mormon with Beth and her teaching. And I really want to know more about the Book of Mormon. You know, I do have questions about the Book of Mormon. And what happened is that instead of Beth, our ward split, and Beth didn't come to our ward. And guess who got called to be the teacher? What a wonderful way to learn, but to teach. You know, I was forced to, like, read more. I was forced to teach. Got more in class. So I have had a big learning curve in teaching and Book of Mormon and Doctrine and Covenant. But my main thing is I still had questions. I have a lot of questions in my head about the priesthood in the church. I'm raising two black sons, and I was very uncomfortable with that situation, and I never really had it explained to me. And why didn't God give black men the priesthood? And what a God, how God could segregate like that. He's supposed to be a loving God, a kind God. But I was just so, in the past few years going back, I didn't embellish on that because I was more savoring the gospel in my mouth. The gospel was so sweet to me that I was savoring that. That was it. And that was a question, but it was way back here in my head. I didn't want to deal with it because I didn't want negativity at all. I want to enjoy all this positiveness. And then I went out to visit Renee in Utah. And about a couple of months, a month ago, I came to visit Renee. And we went to this, something like this, called Genesis. Genesis is an organization in the church for black members in Utah that support black members or even white members that adopt black kids or black and white couples and even people from different nationalities, Asians and all different walks of life that are just not white. And it was really a very touching and spiritual experience for me because I went to Utah with this mind that this is a white world, this is a white church, whatever. And when I got to Utah, I had the best experience in my life. Everybody was open, receptive, loving, sweet. I have not had a negative experience. So when they actually, the person that took me to symposium is Dr. Boehm. He's a professor at BYU. He teaches race relations. And when symposium was over, and everybody was just like mingling and talking and stuff like that, I was talking to some guys, and I heard this man said, I was in the church since 1969, and he's this black guy. And I turned around to him and I said, well, what was it like, being at a church and not having the priesthood? And we started talking, and he was the most humblest human being on earth. And I'm here to tell you what he said to me is I couldn't understand it if I didn't have the Spirit of the Lord with me. It was a spiritual understanding that night that happened. He said to me, I joined the church, and he bore me his testimony of when he got baptized, he said, before his baptism, and the missionaries were teaching him, he asked them, you're talking about the Lamanites and their dark skin. What is that about me? And the missionary says, yes, it's about a priesthood. And he's like, well, I could never join a church like yours. It's a prejudiced church because how could you guys give all the white men the priesthood and the black men can't have? I can't join this church. So what he did, he went home and he knelt and he prayed. And he received confirmation from the Lord that it was okay to join the church. And it had nothing to do with him. He went home. He went the next day. He got baptized, and he's in the church since 1969. He was actually one of the first black men in the Salt Lake Temple that received the, that was able to get the priesthood. So we continued to talk. But what he did, he went a little further with me. He says, in the book of Acts, when Cornelius, who was a Gentile, did not, and he was starting to tell, to tell me how God is not a respecter of persons, and that when Simon Peter and Cornelius had the same vision, and the Lord brought them together. When Simon Peter said, if God or when they all got into the Holy Ghost, when he went to see Cornelius, and they're talking about the repentance and baptism, and he, because it was not right for the Jews to mix with the Gentiles in those times, and they felt of the Spirit when they got together, and they both had the same vision. And Cornelius says, if God could ordain, I may not be quoting it right, but if God ordained this, who am I not to back it? And that is how the priesthood is all about, It's something of God, and it's something that God, it's not, man can't give nor take the priesthood. Only God could do that. It's just something of the Lord. And it's not what he said to me, but it's just a spiritual bosom, spiritual connection that we made that night. I just bust out in tears because I knew he was telling me the truth, and I knew it was something of the Lord, and I felt so comfortable. And my daughter was just so amazed that I was crying. She's like, "Mommy, what's going on?" She's like, "You know who's that guy you just spoke with?" And she's rubbed my back, and I was like, "No." She's like, "His name is Brother Cherry. He wrote a book about the priesthood in the church." I was like, "Really? I didn't know that." I turned around and I ran back in the room. I was like, "Brother Cherry, you would not believe. I did not know who you were. I did not know you wrote this book." But I was just prompted to ask you these questions. And, you know, the Lord really do know what we need, when we need it, and how to give it to us. And we have to trust him. And he gave me those answers. And I was like the happiest person that night in the world. It was like my day of Pentecost. I cried all night, and my daughter couldn't understand why I was crying. It was just so much that I have understood that night. And it has brought me to a greater light about the church and about the gospel. And, you know, my faith is firm in this church. And this is the true church of Jesus Christ. And I say these things humbly in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
We probably should start taking questions.
Hi, my name is Amede Ulay. I'm from Ivory Coast, as he said. I was born and raised in a tiny village of Cote d'Ivoire. It's called Tiedru. My parents have two kids. My father and mother have two kids, my older brother and myself. But before my father married my mom, he had a daughter. So she's my older daughter, sister, but she passed away a year ago. She left her four kids. And after my mom died, my father got remarried. He had a son, his name is Jean-Louis. He's now 13 years old. Right after he was born, my father passed away. And so it's a small family. My life has been has been a series of testimonies of God. As I said, I lost my mom when I was a baby, and I grew up in the village, and then later I went to the city to go to junior high school, and then high school. So my parents, yes, they brought me in this life, but they didn't raise me at all, because the society raised me. And I always felt that God has a mission for me, and that is why throughout my youth I was always a good boy, very focused and dedicated to my school, dedicated to my other relatives. And when I was in junior high, and I tried to be a Catholic. And one day, I pray after we met the priest. I pray so that I can be the first of the class, because I was competing with another student. And there's one exam that will separate me and him. Who is going to be the first? And, you know, when I prayed, I didn't get the best score, so I was second. So I said, "This is not the right church." that changed my mind. You know, I was a boy. I didn't know what I was doing anyway. But somehow God didn't answer my prayer. So I said, "Hey, this is not a good church then. I'm going somewhere else." But anyway, after my high school, I went to France. You know, I went to Paris. well, my parents didn't have money, but I want to get out of the country because I was young, but I was political aware of what's going on in the country. So I told my brother, my older brother, I said, I have to go out of the country. He said, where you want to go? I said, I want to go to Paris. He said, we don't have money. I said, so I want to go. And he helped me with small, he worked at the utility company there. He was making probably $100 a month, but he saved. And then we managed to get a plane ticket, and I went to Paris. I went there. Life was rough. I had no money. I was working at this place and other places, and I had to support myself. To him, he gave me his bank statement. There were a lot of money in the bank because he's a lawyer. And he gave me the visa. And I came here when I first got here, I had like probably 25 one quarter. When I got off the plane, I passed the immigration. I only the change I had is about worth a quarter. So I approached someone there and I said, hey, listen, I want to call my cousin in New York. He took my quarter. He made the phone call, and my cousin boss came late at night to pick me up. Then we went to Long Island. I spent 5 days there, and I got here on the October 5th of 1988. So I spent 5 days there, got to Washington on the 10th of October 1988. The next day, I started looking for the missionary, where the church. I felt that probably I stepped my feet in the land of the church. I said, probably this is it. Probably this is the my opportunity to get baptized and so forth. So I just decided to. I felt strongly that I had to be a member of the church, and it's what I did in August 1989. So after almost 1 year after I got here. My experience with the church was a great experience. A great experience in terms of discovering other side of the church. Throughout the years, I discovered that being Mormon is another way of life. Right? It's another way of doing things. It's a way that people need to strengthen their relationship with their own family and also with God. That's one of the parts of the church I really like, because I grew up without my parents. I grew up without my family. And when I see family members of the church being strong and going to visit the children, strengthen the family bonds, that impressed me a lot. So I want to be like you guys. I said, well, I stick with the church. I find my church. I know through with the church, I will be able to be who I want to be. I want to be a good man. I want to be a better man. So later, I decided to go to the temple, and I did that proudly, and that strengthened my bond with the Heavenly Father. And all I want to say is that regardless of our differences, we should all remember Jesus Christ suffered to establish the church. Jesus Christ suffered to bring people together. We all have to remember that. Let's put our differences to aside and look further in the future. After this life, this is very important. We all have to be together. And this is very important. And I know that there will be always differences, but yet we belong to one thing, the Lord. The Lord is all I have to say. Amen.
Thank you.
right, we have a couple of minutes for questions, if anyone has. Anybody have any questions? Yes, and then I'll repeat it. Let me repeat that for the tape. The question was the experience for Terry if the state president had reacted the same way if she'd just been a woman, or if it was the fact that she was an African American woman,
or
anybody.
Was it to you as an African American woman,
or was it his problem?
Not like anybody that would have been put in there.
I think it was because, you know, I think I said initially I had come into the church right after the blacks were given the priesthood. And there were quite a few people who took exceptions to that. And I feel that he did not feel at this time that I knew enough about the church or anything else to be teaching the class. But as I said before, I had been brought up as a Christian person and have been studying the scripture, at least the Bible, all my life. And if, in fact, what the church had been saying all along is that God calls you to the calling, I didn't see why he should have a problem with what God did.
Right.
Yes, I have asked the church to help, and I've gotten a rather negative response from the church as a whole. There are certain members within the church who have been very supportive, and I guess the thing that bothers me the most about that, we have groups that come from all over that support the shelter. We have church about 20 or 30 some churches that support the shelter. But to say that the church I attend support it, I couldn't say that truthfully. I could say certain members support it. I was asked by a group that comes from BYU every year because of all the colleges come and do spring breaks there at the shelter. And they wanted to know why I didn't ask the church to support it. And I said, I've asked them two times I've asked, officially asked. And after that, I said I wouldn't ask anymore. Yeah. She's asking what kind of things would people from the church be doing at the shelter. The kind of support that I get. Now, the church is very good. You know, once a year, they're supposed to go out and do community service, and sometimes it's kind of hard to get a project, and they will always call me to see if they can come and help clean up. And I'll have about 100 people who will come and help clean up. But when you're dealing with social issues and problems, it goes past cleaning up. It goes past bringing some food to share with people, and it goes past giving the clothes that you want to someone else, that you don't want to someone else. I think the biggest problem that I have with anyone who wants to do service is the best service you can do is one-on-one, where you can sit down with the person and find out something about the person. The person's not so much unlike you. And see how you can help support that person, help them do what you do. But having done all of that, I guess the most important thing that I say to homeless people or people who seem to be out of the loop of where they need to be is to get that person to turn and focus on God, because if that you can get them to focus on God and they accept God in their life, then they can solve all their problems themselves. I really believe that.
This is kind of a general question, and I serve as the state young women's president in my state in Boston, and one of the things that in some ways is disturbing to me and in other ways it's not, but I would be very interested in what the three of you think about this. The way that our units are organized, we have three inner city units that are predominantly African American, actually one of them is a patient. And so what I find and women who see other African American or Asian young women, but they rarely integrate with the rest of the young women in the state, except for maybe once a month at a Super Saturday event or during camp. And I'm wondering if the churches, I know that there's a Haitian branch, and so they speak that it's given to French or Creole, and then we have the Hispanic branches that are Spanish. But this segregation, this language segregation, is making it so that our congregations are not integrated. Mm-hmm. And so what I have are these, you know, the suburban youth groups and the inner city youth groups, and we rarely can integrate. And I was particularly touched by the comment that you made about we so often just see these differences and we forget that we have this common link of the gospel. And in our youth, that's, you know, it's a challenge for adults to do that. So I would just, what do you think about it? Do you think the church should encourage less segregation within the
community? Right. I strongly believe that what the leaders set as objective, probably how you structure a church, it is very important on how people interact. All right? If you said, okay, you French people, you have your meeting here, you Spanish people, you have your meeting there, there would never be integration. All right? So they had to say, hey, we all meet here, and we all have our discussion here. That's it. All right? That is why... There's one beauty thing that God has done. He has diversified this world. But at the same time, in this diversified world, we had to get together, all right, and create one in our church, all right. But if in the church we have to say, okay, French people here, Spanish people there, no.
I think people are comfortable. First of all, we start off being comfortable with people that we're comfortable with. And blacks are, you know, whether we want to accept it or not, are usually more comfortable around other blacks, Hispanics around other Hispanics. The thing is, we have to get past that at some point in time where we can learn to be comfortable with everyone. Now, I will go to the Hispanic, to the Spanish branch, even though my Spanish isn't as good as it should be, but I know if I go long enough, it helps me to increase my Spanish, and it helps me to participate with the members in that ward. So I think we need to reach out sometimes into those other areas and let them know that we're there and we want to be a part. Now, the Spanish branch where we are, they often want to, you know, partake in what we're doing, and they say, well, let's have some kind of event where we all get together. And we do that quite often, yes.
I just don't know where I can do it. I just want to throw in a comment, and I know we're out of time. But simply, I'm more comfortable when you're with us. Mm-hmm. I want you to know that. When I encounter anybody in this church that is a white, dominated, patriarchal church, I want to be positive and negative, it just is. When I see any people of different color, of different ethnicity, of different culture, you build my faith, my testimony so much. I don't have your courage. I don't have your testimony. I don't have your faith. I am so grateful for every person of different culture that comes to this church and teaches. And I'm so grateful. I suggest I couldn't stay in the church, I think, if it were for you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So,
thank you. My daughter was just trying to jump up and share her experience.
I'm sorry she didn't get a chance to do that.